Hey, everybody, this is Richard Deitch, and welcome to the Sports Illustrated Media Podcast. My producer, as always, is Lou Pellegrino. We've got an interesting conversation for you. It's three independent sports journalists who have decided to form their own websites / subscription services. Dejan Kovacevic is from Pittsburgh. His site is dkpittsburghsports.com. Paul Kuharski is from paulkuharski.com. And Greg Bedard is the founder and columnist for bostonsportsjournal.com. And we have a conversation with each of them. These are separate interviews where they give you the blueprint of why they decided to go out on their own, how they did it, some of their findings have been in each of these markets, and these are sports-crazed markets, Pittsburgh, Nashville, and Boston, and how they intend to succeed against some fairly big competition, especially in Greg Bedard's case in Boston, which is just an incredible sports media city. So three separate conversations about each of these separate sites, how they went about getting into the market, and how they hope to succeed. This is an independent sports journalism-focused podcast. I hope you enjoy it. So coming up, we start with Dejan Kovacevic of dkpittsburghsports.com. Okay, and as promised, we bring on first Dejan Kovacevic. How'd I do on that? Close?
Actually, that's really close, Richard. You did well.
He is the founder and editor of dkpittsburghsports.com. That's DK, spell Pittsburgh Sports out.com. And he is the first guest of our trio of independent sports journalists who once worked for quote-unquote mainstream publications and then have went off on their own. You are first up because you are really the pioneer of this. And this is where I want to start with. In July 2014, you founded your site, Dejan, and I want you to tell the story, but at that time you didn't have Greg Bedard and Paul Kuharski and The Athletic and everyone else, so you were really on an island. And if you could, at least for my listeners, just give them a sense of how big a leap this was at the time for you to do this.
Well, at the time I was columnist at the Pittsburgh Tribune Review. I had been there for 4 years. Before that, I was for 20 years at the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette. Those were, at the time, Pittsburgh's two biggest newspapers. And in all honesty, Richard, what I did at the time was based not at all on money, for one thing. I was doing six figures at the Trib, and with two young kids, and both of them heading toward college, health insurance and all that other stuff. And I was, in all honesty, just tired of the idea of being part of a business that was just constantly going downhill. And I'm obviously not just referring to the Pittsburgh papers. I mean, the industry as a whole. And it felt like no matter what you did as an individual, that it made no difference to the collective. You could write the world's greatest articles, whoever, and, you know, hear all kinds of good things from readers and get all kinds of wonderful feedback. It never made a difference, because all you would read about or hear about the next day is that your business is dying. You're in a dying business. Everything is going to hell, and, you know, you're going to go down with it. It gets, you know, a little discouraging, to say the least. And at the time, I wanted to try something. Obviously, that involves a moment of pretty significant insanity to think of something like that, much less act on it. But it was a conversation that I had with my wife. I had been, I don't like to look at it as a negative, but I had been upset with some things that had happened at the Trib, particularly as it related to online. All the focus was just print, 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 because everyone was so afraid to leave it. And I really felt like there was a way that I could hopefully connect with readers who had been reading my stuff. My wife and I stayed up all night one night, you know, about 3 a.m. We came up with a magic number that was going to be, if we got 10,000 people to pay for a website, then we would pretty much make what I was making now. So how many readers do you get on average in the Pittsburgh market, which is obviously not the biggest, but is also one of the most passionate in terms of sports. How are you going to get him? How many are you going to get? How quickly are you going to get him? What kind of cash flow are you going to get? Can you travel? We came up with the number 10,000. We felt if we could come up with 10,000 of them, we'd pull it off. So, you know, if I'm getting 25,000 people on average to read a Steelers column online on a newspaper site, then it would take about a third of that to pull it off. And we were fortunate to have that 10,000 figure within 8 months.
The interesting thing to me is that I look at your site now, and one of the things I really, really appreciate about it is you are forward or public with the number of subscriptions that you have. When I looked at it, I think it was last night, it's at 39,780 paid subscriptions on the site. Maybe it's updated as of today, but is that roughly pretty close?
Yeah, and we put all of our numbers, everything. Our app downloads, our the type of subscriptions that are sold, every bit of information that we have, we've put out there from the beginning. That's something that I saw a couple of other independent political sites do at the time, and I could see that the readers really seemed to appreciate seeing the numbers on a weekly basis and getting behind them and feeling like they were making a difference, feeling like, you know, each milestone was an achievement for them as well. And that's a lot of the feedback that we got. Now, obviously, when you put numbers out, you know, there's also going to be, you know, negative reactions to that too, or, you know, people want even more, tell us this, tell us that, how much did this sponsor pay you, how much did, you know, okay, easy now. You know, people have asked us some of the craziest questions, you know, how much, you know, do your people make individually, you know, we've been, like I said, kind of transparent about this, and I think it's worked for us for the most part. It's been something that our subscribers seem to have genuinely appreciated, and they've told us that.
How competitive is the Pittsburgh market for you in terms of you have your staff, if I'm right about this, you have a full-time staff of, is it 11, 10, something to
yes.
that? Okay.
Mm-hmm.
So you have on there, you have reporters, you have photographers, you have a cartoonist, mm-hmm. which is pretty cool, multimedia director, social media person, and eventually I want to get to the tech end because that's really, really interesting. So you have, when you have a legitimate staff, how competitive are you, in your opinion, versus the daily that's there?
Well, we're not really doing the same thing, and we don't really focus on competition. You're referring to the Post-Gazette, which is the last newspaper. That's
yeah, right, right, yeah, yeah, right, exactly.
Yeah, I mean, they're still built on a print model. Everything that they do, their time cycles, their deadlines, their delivery trucks, their printing presses, everything is built on a print model. The subscription is done off to the side. If you buy a one-year subscription just to the sports-only content at the Post-Gazette, it's $96. Ours is $29.99. You know, and we're not covering high schools, but we're covering the pro teams we feel at the same level or comparable level, depending on your opinion. We've covered the colleges, Pitt, Penn State, Duquesne, Robert Morris. And it's just not something that we hear a lot about. We don't hear readers say, well, we have to choose between the Post-Gazette or you. We're doing a different thing. We're in a ton of, as again, we print every Saturday on the site, mobile devices. That's where we feel we were first and made a leap ahead. Now, we don't know exactly what the Post-Gazette's mobile device numbers. It's not something they put out. They actually don't release any kind of information. But we're pretty confident that we're way ahead in that market.
Hmm.
And you know how that is, Richard. Once you're in somebody's phone, it's hard to get out.
Very much so.
Who wipes out apps? You know, you just kind of keep adding more pages for them. And, you know, we hear from readers every once in a while who say, congratulations, you made it to my front page on the app. Well, we've been at that for about, you know, 3 years and change now, and we feel our app is, you know, a really, really good one, something that we've built. And you said you get to that in a little bit, but we put a lot of work and a lot of money into the app in particular. 70% of our readership right now is on the app. Not the website, not the tablets, just the app.
How have you, well, something that's interesting to me is, I think, and you know this from obviously your years at working for a big daily, is, you know, you, there's some freedom in terms of covering someone objectively, critically, because at least in theory, you have a big organization that's going to have your back, including having your back legally. As an independent and still relatively a small one, has what kind of issues do you face at all with the teams in terms of access or anything else when your stories are critical of either, you know, the Steelers or the Penguins or the Pirates, et cetera?
Well, access hasn't been an issue from the very first day, although it is most definitely the question that I've gotten the most, especially from other journalists, including some who have had trouble. And I'm sure you've heard a couple of those stories.
Of course.
Gaining access. And in my case, you know, as I mentioned earlier, I've been at this for a little while here. I'm born and raised here. Before the site launched, literally, in the 3 to 4 days before that, I met with the media relations people for the Steelers, Penguins, Pirates, and Pitt, all four of them. And I wasn't about to launch without knowing that I could get into the ballparks, right? So, you know, once that happened, there was just an understanding. They know who I am. They know, you know, of my reputation, I hope, for being fair, including when it's critical. And it's been, you know, there have been times when I've been really critical, especially of the Pirates, who I think are very poorly run. Their ownership, their front office in particular, and the issue of credentials or anything else never comes up. It just doesn't. It's a complete non-issue. Over the course of time, you know, I've gotten back into Baseball Writers Association, Pro Football Writers Association, Pro Hockey Writers Association, and that applies to the website. So there really isn't, we're not treated any differently by anybody anywhere, home or road, and that includes the Olympics, the Rio Olympics that I covered in the U.S. Olympic Committee, who, by the way, were actually, and told me so in Rio, they were really happy to have us, and they were hoping that, you know, more independent websites would come to them and, you know, try to cover future Olympics as well. We had four Pittsburgh women participate in the Rio Olympics, and three of them won gold. We were proud to be the only Pittsburgh outlet down there covering them.
One of the, you know, I think a pretty significant listenership of this podcast are young people in the business, as well as probably some college students who are majoring journalism, communications, et cetera. Over the last 3+ years, what findings could you provide for them in terms of some young people who see the landscape ahead of them and think to themselves, the only way I can be in this profession is if I own my own content and create my own business? What from your end, having really being among, if not the most successful pioneer of this, what have you found that is the most important thing to make this successful?
Well, are you asking from the standpoint of young people just trying to start this from scratch?
I guess I'm asking for some top line findings that you've had in relation to people. And maybe it's impossible for a young person to do it because they don't have a name in a city. But I think from both how you built this site tech-wise to just how you approached it in terms of your marketing to potential customers and the way you're really – it almost strikes me is that you're trying to make it a – you know, trying to make this a community rather than your people being quote-unquote customers. So I think there's just some things – things people can learn from you.
From that standpoint – I'll answer that two ways. The first one, and this isn't to dump cold water on anybody else who wants to try it, but the various organizations that I've already mentioned, the NFL, the NHL, and Major League Baseball, all have had among their media relations people discussions, in the case of baseball, and a full meeting about us and what would happen when the next person comes knocking on the door. And as Greg Bedard in Boston has found out, you know, if you come with a reputation, with a background, and you approach the right people, you work your way into that. Now, for someone, even the most brilliant, whoever, who's a young guy who doesn't have a background in, candidly here, old school journalism, that's going to be difficult because they're not just going to open up their press boxes to everybody any more than they did to bloggers or anyone else. So that part is, that's a challenge. You can't just pull this out of thin air. And I think that's something that eventually all three, I'm in Pittsburgh, we don't have an NBA team, all four of the major professional sports leagues are going to have to figure out. And that, I don't think that's going to be easy or cut and dried for them, and it might be done on a team-by-team basis. As far as connecting, we had a TV commercial that was shot here for us a couple of years ago, and the guy who was shooting it came up with the idea of a slogan. I told him, no, man, no slogans. That's so cheesy. Don't do slogans. He goes, all right. So he comes back the next day with a slogan. He says, it's coverage that connects. Oh, wow, dude, really? I mean, it was perfect. And we ran with it because the way we've approached things, and I think this is what you're referring to, we have our live question and answer sessions every day. We meet with our subscribers in multiple cities. Local biggest bank, PNC Bank, Pittsburgh Institution, now sponsors our meetups when we go places because they were so into the idea. We would take pictures and wherever else, our reporters, and put them on social media and everything else. We feel even in our writing style that we are writing with the readers as opposed to at them or down to them. You will never see in any of our stories phrase Steelers quarterback Ben Roethlisberger.
Yeah, I read that.
Everybody
that was interesting.
Ben is.
That's interesting. Yep.
Yeah. Yeah, and but we actually take it further. We also won't tell you who Ramon Foster is. He's just Ramon Foster. If you're a diehard Steelers fan, you don't need me to tell you he's the left guard. So it's that's the approach that we've taken. We want people who, if you think about the concept, if you're paying anything, even our low price by comparison, to read about your favorite sports teams, you're already into it. You know, we don't really, Richard, do things that are, journalistically pioneering. I have never seen our operation as being that way. I don't think it's like we're reinventing the wheel in terms of how we write, report, or present things. Even the biggest benefit that we have not having print deadlines isn't something that's unique. I think it's much more of a matter of focusing on the business aspect of it, is that we need to be with these readers. We need to listen to them. We need to react to them. Doesn't mean you pander. Doesn't mean you write things that are always going to be super popular with everybody. I say this all the time, but nobody in our business results in more cancellations than I do, because I'm just going to say what I think. Hopefully over time, your readers that are a little bit more informed are going to be appreciative of that and say, look, I don't agree with you on this Pirates thing, but, I think you were dead on the Steelers issue. So over the course of time, that's another thing that we've heard of a lot, is the coverage that connects thing has been really, really, really big for us.
How can you take me through how you developed your website and technology? And now, if I understand this correctly, Greg Bedard, who's going to be a guest on this podcast, has licensed your technology for his site. And so you're now in an interesting place where you're not only a content provider of Pittsburgh sports, you've now provided the back end or the CMS for another site.
Yeah, I can't describe to you how we got to this point without a whole bunch of F-bombs. And I'm not going to do that to your podcast.
We can always hit the we can hit the explicit tag. It's not a big deal.
It has been a trial and a half, and it's cost us well into six figures to get to where we are, because you know what? These things don't exist. You can't just open up WordPress, open up a plugin, and say, oh, look, here's an independent media site. It just doesn't exist. There are obviously blog platforms, fantastic magazine, news-style presentations, but nobody had ever, unfortunately for us, combined that with subscriptions. There's only one company in the United States, believe it or not, that does any kind of subscription services, and they cost $10,000 a year. I'm not going to name them to pick on them, but that's what they want. And they serve the major magazines, especially the women's magazines. That was the biggest issue, was the commerce platform. It just flat out didn't exist. So we went through a whole bunch of trial and error, put everything together, kept reacting to the readers' praise and criticism and whatever else there was to keep changing it. We're still doing that. We still have a couple of minor issues with it 3.5 years later. But we've worked with a local Pittsburgh developer because we got tired of dealing with whoever in Taiwan or Bangladesh and whatever else that you couldn't face. We wanted to have somebody we could sit with and explain to, because these guys happen to also be Pittsburgh sports fans. They're right up the river from me. And we sat with them. They're called Build in Motion. They're kind of a startup of themselves. And we developed something that we felt really worked. But again, that was after trial and error. So yeah, so Greg Bedard calls and he wants to do something similar. So we, okay, let's see what we can do. And we basically created a carbon print, a copy of our site, sold it to Greg for a one-time fee. One time, no strings attached, no nothing, because I didn't want to have anything to do with Greg's site. As much as I wish him well, I don't, you know, I'm not interested in franchising. I'm only interested in Pittsburgh, always have been. And I also wanted Greg to be his owner, you know, be his owner, to have his own site up in Boston. And he's done extremely well from that. So, you know, what we're going to do from that is we're going to offer this, and are currently, to anybody who wants it. You don't have to wait for somebody to walk into your town and anoint you. You know, if you want to start a media site, if you want to try some small, large, Los Angeles, New York, Miami, St. Louis, or Oklahoma City, or wherever, you know, you can get this media site and just start it yourself. Why wait for somebody to come and, you know, pick your name?
How do you view The Athletic?
I think you just figured out what I was getting at, right? Well, in all candor here, they came to me a couple of years ago, you know, before they started, and asked me to be involved. And in repeating what I just said, I really wasn't interested in franchising or anything, you know, at that level. I had my hands full here, and I just, you know, very politely declined. They were terrific about it. And, you know, they went ahead, you know, and did their thing and are doing their thing. It, as you can tell, has really nothing in common with what we're doing. They got themselves millions of dollars, 5.8, according to Bloomberg, to, you know, invest, use as seed money, however it is that that stuff works. And as a result, they've gone around and they've thrown some pretty big dollars at people. And their goal apparently is to be in, you know, as many cities as they can. And that, in, that's not what we're doing. It's just not our business. That's, you know, we're all about Pittsburgh. We've been profitable from day one. To my knowledge and from what they've said themselves, they haven't turned a profit in any city other than maybe Toronto to this point. So I hope for the sake of the people who have been hired, some of whom are extraordinarily talented and good people, that it's not just a case of burning through the money in a raging hurry so that they can go back to investors and get more, because I've seen that happen in this business at least twice before in the past decade, and it's a scary thing. But otherwise, honestly, Richard, there's nothing in common.
How, without obviously giving away any kind of dollar figure, can you tell me, are you making more money today for yourself, independent of your staff, than you were when you were a columnist at the Tribune?
I guess that depends on how you define it. I mean, if you were getting into, like, paying ourselves salaries or stuff like that, no.
Right.
I mean, 'cause what we're doing is we're taking the money
and investing it back into the people and the business.
It's just,
right?
Yeah, it's going right back in. And we've tried some things that have worked, and we've tried some that haven't. You know, if the truth is, if I was running this thing in some really ice cold way, We would probably just cover the Penguins and the Steelers. Penguins account for 48% of our traffic, two-time defending Stanley Cup champions. The Steelers are at 25, and then you go all the way down to 14 for the Pirates, and the colleges barely register. So,
that's interesting. Wow, that's a big number. I mean, I knew that, obviously, doing my research, but when you hear it again, it really is a big number for hockey.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Tells you it's underserved in certain markets.
Pittsburgh has become almost a Canadian city.
Hmm.
the passion here for the Penguins and for hockey. And when I say hockey, I'm referring to the youth levels and the amateur levels, the participation. We had the Mario Lemieux generation. We had the Sidney Crosby generation. And again, I'm talking about participants. You know, now it's dads and granddads teaching their kids what they learned. That's Canada, man. You know, that's what that is. And the demographic, if you think about it, works for us. You know, we're proud to have the older readers that we do, but the younger readers are going to have a much easier time finding us on the App Store or Google Play than the older reader is. And the younger fans in this market are Penguins fans. And that's worked out well for us. You want to hear something funny, though, what's neat about that?
Sure.
When we talk about paywalls, which is a word I have a hard time even getting that out of my mouth, because there's not a paywall for anything else in the world except for journalism. It's the only term we use it for, right? I mean, you buy from Amazon. No one says, well, did you go through the paywall to get it? You know, when you walk into a newsstand and pick up a magazine, no one's worried about the emotional repercussions of going through a paywall. You're just buying a magazine, right? It's just value. Well, in our case, we've had older readers have had no problem, none, paying for the subscription. They don't have that paywall attachment because they grew up paying for news. It's not, it doesn't feel any different to them. We've heard that from a lot of them. It's like, oh yeah, of course. Well, I mean, I used to pay $2 a week to have the newspaper thrown onto my driveway. And the younger readers, and by that I'm talking about the 20s and even younger, have grown up in a time where even just in the past few years, the New York Times, I think that they've really set the bar in this regard, or at least they broke through most prominently, made it okay to subscribe to a news thing. You know, and they obviously have a wall that's pretty easily beaten, and I think they should go to a hard wall too, like we do. But the fact that the younger readers didn't grow up in that era where I'm not paying for anything online, ever. It's all free. That's all in the 30s and 40s. You know, it's that middle group that's the one that's the toughest to get to
right. In
this one, because they just have this thing, you know what I'm talking about, where it's all just supposed to be free and wonderful, irrespective of how much work and investment and travel costs and everything else goes into the product.
How much, I'm glad you don't have this problem, but, you know, the Penguins obviously are a two-time Stanley Cup champion recently. The Steelers are always an excellent, generally speaking, always an excellent, successful franchise. The Pirates have now been good for the last couple of years. How much of your business is predicated on the fact that these teams, specifically the Penguins, are really at the, you know, top level of their sports, and they're generally speaking, there's the correlation between success and interest when it comes to readers, subscribers, viewers, et cetera.
What we've found that sells, and this is going to sound almost unnecessarily vague, is hope. As soon as people have hope for a certain situation regarding their favorite team, our subscriptions start rising. And you can actually see it happen like the same day a trade is made. A big win against a team that so-and-so wasn't supposed to beat. As long as people have hope, they're good with it, because then now they see their money, and this is actually a little bit off-kilter here, but they see their money is going toward their fandom, you know, as opposed to just us or reading something. They see it as, well, I'm a Pirates fan. I live in Atlanta, or I live in Europe or wherever, and I believe in what they're doing, and I'm going to invest my dollars in and my time in reading about them. So the hope is what sells more than anything else. which is something that's really surprised me, because it goes against something that, you know, I think we've all been taught, well, negativity sells or controversy sells. Well, those things get clicks. They get page views. If you're into that, we really don't get much benefit from that sort of thing, individual, like, clickbait type stuff. We're trying to sell subscriptions. We're trying to sell a commitment. We're trying to sell a connection. Almost half of our subscribers, Richard, don't live anywhere near Western Pennsylvania.
That's interesting.
We're in 140 countries. There's Pittsburghers all over the world. And now that group overall, the international group, accounts for less than 2%, but they are everywhere. And you know what? Their money, once it goes through the credit card machine, is all green. You know, we just don't need delivery trucks to access them. We're proud of the fact that that again goes back to that Coverage the Connect slogan, that we reach Pittsburghers all over the world. The U.S. ambassador to Madagascar is a subscriber. Our first complaint when our new app came out came from the Central African Republic, because Google had not yet added the Central African Republic to the list of countries that could handle the app. Dude, we're on it, man.
It's probably not something you ever imagined you'd have to handle when you're working at the either the Post-Gazette or the Trib. All right, two last sort of points, and this is just more for my own curiosity's sake. Do you have any subscribers who are members of sports organizations or athletes? And if so, what have they said about your coverage? Not that it would matter, but I'm just curious.
Well, you know, I can't drop names. I'm not going to pull that off. But we have lots of them, yes. And, you know, again, when we're inside this market, we're very well known. We think, based on, you know, the kind of reactions that we get, the social media followings that we have, even people who aren't subscribers know about us at this point. If you add up our whole staff's, you know, various, like, Twitter followings, you're at 225,000. And a lot of that is in market. So one of the reasons, the main reason that we kept the prices as low as we did, even upon launch, we've had only one small increase since then, is that we felt the critical mass was important, especially because it was just me at the start and it was opinion. Nobody cares about anybody's opinion unless the dude at the water cooler has something to say about it. You know, if you're the only one who knows what I read and you can't discuss it with your friends, means nothing. So we felt it was really important right from the beginning to get numbers up of people who were involved. That was actually really important. So yeah, when I write something that ticks people off, it doesn't stay secret, and it does absolutely, believe me, based on some of the nastier feedback that I get, it does make it to the athletes, whether they're subscribed or not, but especially to those who are subscribed.
All right, last one for me is, the number right now obviously is a tick below 39,000. You're obviously ahead of your original, you know, sort of number, and probably now since then have obviously changed the numbers of desired goals. Do you have any kind of sense of as to what the ceiling, a legitimate, not pie in the sky, I wish I had 500,000 people, but what is a legitimate ceiling, you think, for your business? And if so, how long would it take to get to that legitimate ceiling?
I would say that the number would be, and actually that number doesn't mean all that much to us. It's much more about, not to get all businessy and everything on you here, but it's much more about cash flow. It's much more about maintaining,
right,
you know, steady streams of income and all that other boring stuff. If we had a number that I would feel really, really good about in terms of stabilizing the company, making sure that we have the kind of quality journalism that we want. You know, 6 months ago, we hired a long-form journalist, magazine writer, named Adam Flango, who's originally from Pittsburgh, but we got him from Cincinnati Magazine, who's been knocking people dead once a week with these just magnificent pieces. Our reader surprised us with that. We were told it was everything was short attention span, and especially on the app, and they went crazy for the content. We've been flying Adam all over the country to find good stories. That's part of listening to those people, but building it and building it up. Yeah, I would say that 50 would be a number, because the number of teams that we have, the size of the market, the amount of investment that we feel is right and proper to cover them as best we can. Not to mention, you know, eventually making some of that money and putting it into my kids' college educations and all that other stuff. You know, we wouldn't mind pulling that off either. So I think 50 would be the number. Now, obviously, that's going to vary from market to market. But you know what? So can the investment. You were asking earlier about how important Pittsburgh and the passion for sports is. And if I give you a place like Winnipeg that's got the Jets and the Bombers and a minor league baseball team, and Winnipeg puts as much as it needs to into the Jets, a little bit less into the Bombers, and almost nothing into the baseball team, you're not talking about an overall massive expenditure.
Right.
So they just basically right-size to the market. Winnipeg's got a population of 700,000. Pittsburgh is twice that size. You just work with what you have. And that's one of the reasons, I mean, whether it's, you know, Greg Bedard in Boston has a different set of circumstances. He's got five professional teams, if you count MLS, as people really should be doing at this point. And he's got a bigger market, but he's also got a market where the cost of living is a lot higher. And I'm sure you guys will get into that. It's a different situation than Pittsburgh. And Greg had the foresight on his own, without my advice, to make his own adjustments to his price, to his pay scale, to everything that worked with Boston. And, again, it's really worked for him.
Kovacevic, again, I should be much better as a semi-professional host.
You did it well, man. It worked.
DKPittsburghSports.com is his site. And, you know, let's leave on this. Tell people, and feel free to just sort of give your pitch in terms of what they can get, the different kind of memberships, and if they want, obviously, if they want a sort of a sense of what the site is, go to dkpittsburghsports.com, where there's all sorts of Steelers stories right now. As I'm actually here, I'll click this. We'll do this in real time. There's all sorts.
You mean national anthem stories?
Exactly. Alejandro Villa. I'm losing.
You know, you did better with my name than Alex.
You know what? I should just stop the podcast now. Villanueva, yeah, terrible. He's obviously, it's the lead story on your site now. But as a general rule, how can people subscribe to this? They can basically go to the site, and then there's places on the site, right, where they can basically click on different kinds of membership.
There's a subscribe link right at the top and on the app on the settings gear. Our prices are, we let you in for 99 cents for the first month. If you stay monthly, which not many people do, by the way, it's $3.99 per month, $29.99 for a year, $66, because, you know, it's Pittsburgh. We're going to go with Mario Lemieux's number. That's actually been our most popular plan.
You know,
that's the thing. When we raised the price, we went, let's go with $66, because who's going to say a bad word about that, right, around here? And we have a $250 lifetime plan, which I still can't believe we've sold 337 of. And it's literally exactly what it sounds like. You just pay the $250 and you're in forever. The fact that people had that kind of faith in us, think about it, you know, that they were going to get some kind of value of it and believe that we're going to hang around and then I'm not going to go crawling back on my hands and knees to the newspapers at any point. That's been pretty uplifting as well. But that's our site offers full professional beat coverage, travel to every game, every league event. Every all-star game, owners' meetings, all that stuff. We go everywhere. And now with the addition of the long-form guy, we even fly around for stuff like that.
That's cool.
It's the travel budget. Here's a number I will give you. The travel budget last year was for us was $150,000.
Nice. Not bad.
And this one this year will be a little bit lower because the Penguins had the common decency to win the Stanley Cup within driving distances. and there's no Olympics this year, so we'll be a little bit lower than that this year. But that's a pretty significant commitment in an era where almost everybody else is cutting travel. We felt it's super, super important to be there, to be on the scene.
Yeah, and obviously if you go on the site, there are ads, so you're obviously bringing sponsors in, but it's a very clean look, so it's no pop-ups.
We keep them off to the side.
Yeah,
the sponsorships account for about a quarter of our revenue. We're very much subscription driven, but the sponsorships have absolutely helped, especially as it relates to travel and those kinds of things.
For sure. Listen, thank you very much for the time. We're going to talk to Paul Kurhowski and Greg Bedard, but we want to start off with you because sort of you're the forerunner on this, and we'll be reading you in Pittsburgh, and particularly those who are fans of Pittsburgh sports. Thanks again for joining us on the Sports Illustrated Media Podcast.
Thank you, Richard. Appreciate it.
All right, up next, we head west to Nashville, where the guest is Paul Kurhowski. He is the editor, founder, proprietor of PaulKurhowski.com. That's PaulKurhowski.com, KUHARSKY.com. And he joins us now on the Sports Illustrated podcast as part of our Sports Illustrated Media podcast, as part of our sort of independent journalist episode. Paul, welcome. And I want to start off with this. You are a longtime figure in the Nashville market, having covered the Titans for ESPN, among other places. And this decision to go independent and to start your own site is relatively new. Can you give listeners a little background as to why you decided to make this the next chapter in your professional life?
Well, Richard, thanks so much for having me and including me in this. I'm a full-time radio guy in addition to a full-time writer. For the last 6 years, I've had both those jobs. And so my job on the Midday 180 with Jonathan Hutton and Chad Withrow every day in Nashville from 12 to 3 on 104.5 The Zone has kind of gave me a little bit of elbow room as I looked to figure out what was next for me. At ESPN, when I started there, I was one of the 8 original people doing the NFL blogs by division, and then eventually one of the 32 doing team-by-team pages, and that was kind of cutting edge at the time it started. And it seems to me like this path that your other guests and I are taking now is kind of the new next wave, and I think people... I'm not looking for a million clicks. I think the way to go right now is to super serve a small club. And so that's kind of my thing here. People, when I was done at ESPN, said, are you still going to be out there asking the tough questions? I really still want to hear you on the Titans. Obviously, they're used to that on the radio. Nobody was hiring for that position, so to speak. And, you know, as I did investigation about how I could become my own brand and continue to do the kind of things that I liked to do, it seemed like a leap of faith worth trying. And so far, so good for sure.
All right. Let's sort of like unwrap a little bit of this. The first part, obviously, is you have to get a site up and you have to sort of do the tech end and the business end. So how did you approach that?
Friend of a friend suggested a website guy who I sat down with in Nashville who gave me a $25,000 price.
Wow.
So I went back to the friend of a friend and I was like, yeah, that's a little bit beyond my budget. And gave me another friend, Brent Peacher, who is based in Lexington, Kentucky, and actually has done a lot of stuff for people on Music Row, who was interested in a sports venture, something different than he'd done before. And for a far, far more reasonable price, he created what I think is a good-looking, sleek website that translates very well to the phone, that's easy to navigate and easy to use from my end of posting columns, articles, videos, audio, if and when I get to that. And so it was really kind of simple as that. I paid him in 2 stages. We're still kind of polishing things out. There'll be some advertising, but non-obtrusive stuff. I found a travel sponsor who's the first guy at MDI Construction who decided it was worth his while to fund me being on the road, which was my biggest concern in terms of staying all the way in. And so I'm traveling thanks to him. And, you know, the site part was actually, once I found the right guy, easier than I imagined. He might disagree with that because I think his phone rings and his email bell dings a little bit more often than he probably signed up for.
How did you decide on pricing in terms of, you know, memberships and whatever the pricing sort of strategy would be depending on what kind of access you want to your site?
Well, I really... You know, I started off thinking about Patreon, which I like the model where you kind of it's kind of a Kickstarter for content. You say, hey, for this much you get this, and for this much you get that, and kind of work your way up tiers. So I was thinking in terms of tiers for a good while at the beginning. And then the more people I talked to, a lot said, listen, you've got 90,000 Twitter followers. You've got a big radio audience. Patreon's more for people trying to find their audience as opposed to people with an audience. So that kind of led me to brand it as my own thing and do my own site. But the number I had in my head that whole time was $5.99 a month, just thinking, you know, if you're getting a good beer at a bar or the coffee that people, unlike me, wait a half an hour in line for, you're spending that, and that what I was going to give you was worth one of those a month. I took to marketing myself as bottled water for Titans fans because Howard Stern used that line when he went to satellite radio when he was on Letterman. So I've got a big bottle of Fiji water on my desk that I hold up as a prop sometimes when I'm doing Periscope and Facebook Live. I'm giving people 12 months for the price of 11 if you buy the year. And then where I stumbled was kind of with higher tiers. I did well finding the baseline tier, and I did well finding the max tier. I didn't do well finding a middle tier, which I have some regret for. But my max tier sold out in 2 days. $100 a month to be in my starting 22. Four annual gatherings a year where I buy the first round and we put our phones down and talk off the record and I try to bring a guest. I'll play a round of golf with you over the course of the year or do something in a small group akin to that. And you get my cell phone number. And so we have a big group text that we do together. And if you have a question, I'm perfectly happy to answer if you're not texting me in the middle of the night or 100 times a day. And that group of guys has been really phenomenal. And I think they feel connected and have access in a way that's new, you know. So I kind of thought of it. I'm a Springsteen fanatic. I know I'm not getting access to Springsteen. What would I pay to have access to a guy that had access to Springsteen? $6 a month sounds like a steal to me.
That's interesting. Do you put, have you, you know, like these other sites, including Greg's and Dayon's, are you putting the number of subscribers, members you have on your site to make public or no?
I'm not. I haven't really thought about it. I haven't really been asked about it. But like I said, I don't know that it would serve the site and the whole mission well, because unlike those guys who are covering an entire city and have a staff and that, like I said, I'm going for the small club atmosphere. I'm calling them members, not subscribers. And I've already gotten a good story idea or two out of people who are paying $5.99 a month. But I, like I said, I'm sticking with that. I want to super serve a small group, right. And I don't want to do anything that would make that small group feel like they're not a big deal. And so I think if some people saw a number that they didn't consider quote-unquote big, they might make light of it. And I want these people to feel big. They are big. They're to me, they're the kind of Titans fans, and I'm not only riding Titans, but if you need the jersey of your favorite player, if you need tickets to a certain game, if there's a checklist of things you need to qualify as a top-flight Titans fan, I'm hoping that a membership to paulkuharsky.com becomes part of that list, and the number of people who have chosen to do that so far is beyond what I expected 3 weeks into the season, considering that I didn't start charging until about 3 weeks into training camp.
Here's something that's really interesting to me, and I'm going to talk about this obviously with the other two guys, but it really is more of a factor for you since you are essentially a single team service. How important is it for the Titans to be good for you based on your business and your opinion?
I think it was certainly help, but I will say this. I saw a bigger spike in subscriptions and memberships the day after the loss to Oakland than I did the day after the win over the Jaguars or the win over the Seahawks. Now, that could have just been that it was opening day, but that'll be a curious thing for me to monitor. I think 8-8 really, or middling team, might be the worst case scenario. If they're really bad, you've got a lot of stuff to criticize, and you've got a high draft pick that carries you through draft season. And if they're really good, then obviously you would think things would peak playoff time. But really, I still think it's the same thing. I want compelling people and compelling stories, decisions to debate. good or bad, that produce some kind of result that people want to talk about. And I think you can get that out of a lot of different kind of teams and kind of results. The team's got more personality than it's had in some time. It's got better leadership than it's had in some time. And I think, too, I bring, obviously, the institutional knowledge. I covered this team's last year in Houston in 1996 and came with it to Tennessee. All the mostly young people who are covering it now don't have any of that context. And couldn't tell you who the seven wide receivers coaches that this team has gone through and how it hasn't worked. The context on things like that comes from me better than anywhere else, and I think that's important to a good share of the fandom.
One of the things about a site like this, obviously, is it's all consuming. You right now are the only employee, so you're going to do all the writing, you're going to do all the troubleshooting, you're going to do all the business side. Realistically, how long can you do that? Or do you ultimately have to at least expand to either get another writer, a business person, a social media person? I'm impressed by it, but I do wonder if, like, is there a certain point where you look heading forward? Because you have to obviously provide all the content right now from the team that you're gonna have to expand, if nothing else, for your own physical and emotional well-being.
Yeah, and my wife's and my son's. I admit to not really. I knew it would take a lot of time and effort, and I'm still figuring a lot of those things out. I do have somebody helping me with a little bit of the administrative stuff. My wife's got a finance background, so she's playing with the numbers, and the website guy is still helpful. I'm hiring a company that'll kind of deal with the advertising and the billing and the placement of that sort of stuff. But I got to have, reach a certain number of subscribers before hiring anybody else would be something in the realm of possibility. I think about that most, Richard, when it relates to going on vacation. And I haven't made an agreement with my people that I could say, hey, I'm disappearing for a week. So we'll see how that goes. There's certainly at least one person in Nashville I would love to have writing under my name and for this. But I don't know how feasible that will be, how fast. And so the one thing I'm definitely doing is that, I'm not spending a ton of time searching for a second and third post on a day where a second and third post doesn't present itself. I want to give you at least one good piece of content a day in season for sure. So far it's manageable. The thing that's kind of taken me beyond is that I'm doing these Periscope and Facebook Lives. Some are closed for membership, like post-game and Monday at halftime of Monday Night Football and Thursday at halftime of Thursday Night Football. But the big public ones that are for the masses and serve as a sales pitch for the site, I've found establishments that are paying me to come out and plug their bar and do it from there. And those are kind of, that's an hour plus setup time that's beyond what I would usually have spent working in that regard. Conceivably on a Tuesday, definitely on a Wednesday and a Friday now. And so that's one of the things that's extra that I didn't necessarily foresee that I have a lot of fun doing and that I couldn't pass off to somebody else anyway because I'm selling myself, and that's definitely me.
What have you learned so far about this potential for others? Whether it's others in – let's forget about Nashville for a second. It might be tough for somebody else to do it there, but –
Nobody's doing it here.
Yeah, how feasible do you think it is for for someone who's been in the market, has a little bit of a name, to try to pull this off in? I got to try to think of a city where.
Yeah, it's market to market.
Sacramento or Jacksonville. Like, do you see this kind of being duplicated, or at least in your initial findings, do you think it's specific to Nashville for you?
Well, I think it's. And I don't know DK's whole deal or Bedard's. I respect them both greatly for what they're doing. It's obviously a much bigger scope, and the Athletic as well. And I could see it working on those scales in cities with with multiple teams. This, I think, is a combination of market, where, like I said, I've got that long-time institutional knowledge, plus, you know, the best guy in the market went to work for the team a couple years ago, and so he's obviously not writing everything he used to be writing. And the guy who replaced me is 24 years old, and the Tennessean is struggling. And so I've said to people, you know, if you want what you've come to expect, and you don't like the Tennessean, and you're upset with ESPN the way many people in Tennessee are, well, you can't get that for free anymore. And I think there are a lot of people who, you know, are willing to come to terms with that. There are many people who want to support, you know, a guy that they've liked, whether they like his opinions or not, and support the journalism. And then the Titans own the town as good as the Predators got, and I'll certainly be chiming in on them depending on what happened, but not to, what happens, but not to the same degree. So I think it's market to market, you know. Having the radio show, being an outspoken guy, all of those things kind of make this situation unique for me. And I'm sure there are similarly unique situations elsewhere. But certainly, you know, talk to anybody that was thinking about doing it through the goods and the bads of it at this early stage. I don't know that it could work everywhere. I don't know that it couldn't. I'm hell-bent on making it work here.
All right, two last ones. We'll do one fun one. Marcus Mariota. Is Marcus a legit franchise quarterback heading forward, or will we see him top off at a little bit less than that?
No, I think he's a legit franchise quarterback heading forward to the degree that you must pledge right now to join the national campaign on pronouncing his name Mariota.
Mariota, yeah.
Yeah, and
so this whole podcast is me mangling names, so it fits right in.
We can't fathom how a guy of his stature, having won the Heisman Trophy, it's one thing for you, a print guy, to not have it down. But when the CBS broadcasters come to town and butcher it throughout a telecast, it makes Nashville furious. And
it's a good column for you, Paul. I like that.
Yeah, well, it's been done. He unfortunately, it was for ESPN. He's not the kind of guy who gets his feathers ruffled by anything, you know. But you can get Taylor Lewan, his left tackle, talking about it. And he's like, yeah, what's that about? How does this guy not have the respect where people can pronounce his name? He's got a great skill set. He's got a great mindset. I think he's got pretty good coaches who have a pretty good offensive scheme and an understanding of how to use him. And I number him. And Derek Carr is better than he is right now, but he's also a year ahead. Titans are 2-1 without him playing particularly well. I think he's going to be really good, and I think there are a lot of teams in the league that would trade their quarterback situation for the Titans in a heartbeat. And I confess, I was skeptical when he came out, and you know, Ken Wisenhunt and Rustin Webster were disasters as a head coach and GM here. But they had the foresight, maybe anybody would have, to see that the things he didn't do at Oregon, he didn't do not because he couldn't do them, but because he wasn't asked to do them.
Finally, do you have a long-term sort of plan in terms of how long you want to or think you could do this? Like, are you approaching this is my life for the next 10, 15, 20 years, or do you look at it differently?
I wish I had that much of a long-range plan. I'm 48. I certainly would like this to be my last writing venture. I certainly would like the business to stop changing at a rate where I needed to find another one somewhere near the end, though the older we get, the harder it will be to be employable for an outsider, so self-employed is pretty good in that regard, yeah. I guess. I'd like it to grow into a two-man operation that covered the city sports landscape thoroughly and gave me a venue to vent on the things I want to vent about that relate to the Titans, to the NFL, to my role on the Pro Football Hall of Fame panel, to, you know, why I consistently go into restaurants and stores and there's nobody behind the counter to help me and no urgency for somebody to arrive behind the counter to help me. These are things that have been hits on the radio, and so far they're hits at the site. And I hope that the way I see things and react to things and report on things continues to grow a membership that this club could carry me to where I need to get with the written word and with video in my professional life, supplementing the radio and having the radio supplement it. But, you know, I understand it comes with no guarantees about the timing or anything like that. I do have year-long members who've subscribed for, you know, now 12 months from today. So there's no way I could stop before that's over, and I'm not intending to.
PaulKuharski.com is the site. Paul, certainly people in Nashville know, longtime Titans writer, well-known, I think, for his ESPN work and obviously his work in local radio. If you, if you're a Titans fan and you want to get his coverage and you don't live in Nashville, go to PaulKuharski.com, and then you can click on at the top bar. There's membership information in terms of the different kind of pricing packages from monthly membership.
And merchandise soon annual, to come, Richard, with my excellent logo, which was another big thing for me. At
I
the
love
beginning.
That.
I know that you're going to want to wear PaulKuharski.com t-shirt.
That's, if I wear that in New York City, the demand may really be huge, Paul. You never
that's
know
right.
what will happen.
I wear it around Columbia's campus.
You, wear your,
you could represent us both.
That'd I know. Your star at Columbia still shines bright, even though it's a long way away.
Oh, yeah. I'm sure people are talking about me up there.
Paul, I wish you
an old football team, right? We'll take that.
That's true. Paul, I wish you the best of luck with this endeavor, and hopefully we'll check in with you down the road to see how things are going. Thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you very much for your support. It helps, obviously, for this kind of exposure, and I really appreciate it.
You got it. Thanks for joining us on the Sports Illustrated Media Podcast. All right, we move on from Paul Kuharski to Greg Bedard. He is the founder and columnist of the Boston Sports Journal, a former Sports Illustrated senior writer, former Boston Globe writer. He's covered football in New England for many, many years, known nationally for that as well. And now we'll talk to him about his model in Boston, which, at least for this podcast conversation, probably the most competitive market of any of these guys. Greg Bedard, welcome to the Sports Illustrated Media Podcast.
Hey, Richard. Thanks for having me.
So, Greg, you know, you worked at the Boston Globe. You then went to Sports Illustrated, and then after leaving or being laid off from Sports Illustrated, you sort of came to a fork in the road in terms of what do you want to do next professionally. And what you decided to do was take a big swing in terms of independent journalism, founding this Boston Sports Journal. And not just doing it yourself the way Paul Kuharski is, but you have a staff of five, more than five maybe, but I know the writers are Sean McAdam, Joe McDonald, Christopher Price, Brian Robb. Can you take our listeners sort of inside what you were thinking post-Sports Illustrated and why you opted to do this?
Well, I mean, when I got let go from Sports Illustrated, I actually heard the week after the Super Bowl, and I was able to talk to Chris Stone and get a little bit more lead time because, you know, I was blindsided. I mean, you know, there was no indication anything was coming down the pipe. There was no indication anybody was unhappy with my work or they wanted me to do something different. And so, you know, I was just doing what I was doing. So I had, I wasn't totally surprised because of the way I thought business and the plan was going at Sports Illustrated. That thought, you know, there was going to be a reckoning for a lot of people, but I didn't know whether it would include me. So, you know, I got laid off, and I had a little bit of a lead time, and you know, basically, I didn't announce that I had been laid off. I think till the end of March, which is when my official time there ended, because I was hoping to find something else in the interim. I mean, it's a rough deal. You know, I know you've talked to, you know, people like Jim Trotter and people like that about that, but you know, I wanted to get a new job because I didn't want to have to tell my kids that daddy doesn't have a job. And I didn't want them to have to, as 10-year-old twins, I didn't want them to have to deal with the stress and all that stuff. But you know, things didn't work out. I talked to a bunch of people. There were a bunch of people that wanted to hire me but couldn't hire me, which is sort of the name of the game, you know, right now in the business. And You know, the more I looked around, the more I came to the conclusion very quickly, like, I don't know if there's going to be a chair for me when the music stops. And, you know, one of the things was that a couple of my Twitter followers, once I announced it, they said, you know, you should look at this model in Pittsburgh that DK Pittsburgh Sports is doing. And I hadn't heard about it. And I looked into it, and almost instantly I said to myself, I said, this is the future. This is in my wheelhouse. I think with my history, especially with my history directing the Packers blog at the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, where we did a lot of cool, innovative things. We created a community there, along with my experience with a startup at the MMQB. It took me a couple days, but I told my wife, I said, I think this is what I'm supposed to be doing. And so that's when I started on that track.
So you start on this track, and obviously there's a lot to consider and comprehend. One, obviously, and I think, you know, I would imagine people in your position, before they do their due diligence, are like, okay, I have these contacts, especially with the Patriots. I'll be able to get credentials. I'll be able to get access. If I figure out the web end, I'll be able to produce my content. People will want it. But there's a whole, obviously, gigantic approach to how do you do the tech part of it and the costs, the real-life costs of putting down whatever kind of money exists to get this going. So take me to the next step of, so you decide that I'm going to go independent. I'm going to basically try to own my own content and own my own future. What do you do next in terms of, like, the physical part of getting a site up?
Yeah, well, I said, you know, I decided that that's what I wanted to do. I mean, it wasn't quite as simple as that because, you know, like you said, there's a lot of other factors involved, especially a huge one, which is this economically viable? You know, can we do this? How am I going to do this? And those are questions and answers that really at the time, and I don't know presently, if I could tell you, I definitely know for sure right now, you know, just over 2 months into this thing, that I wasn't sure about, that I didn't have a whole lot of experience. And so, you know, I talked to DK a bit, to sort of, you know, get an inside look at sort of his model and how things work. I didn't understand at the time. I still don't understand at the time how he pays for some of the things that he does. But, you know, basically what we did was my wife just got her master's degree in accounting. She works at a CPA firm. And, you know, she's really good with numbers. She always has been. And so we started to crunch the numbers. We put together a profit and loss statement. We, you know, went through everything, whether it was healthcare, you know, do you offer benefits, you know, all this sort of stuff. How much is it going to cost us? You know, what are the startup costs? All that stuff. Now, I did have her boss, you know, continues to be a business consultant of mine, where he has sort of guided me along the process, and he's been invaluable. There are other people that I've talked to. A lot of my buddies from high school own and started their own businesses. So a lot of them, you know, I consult with. And so basically we put together, after I decided that's what I wanted to do, or at least that's what I thought I wanted to do, or we put together the plan. We looked at the numbers and we said, can we do this? And once we put the numbers together, we said, yes, we can. And then it was sort of, all right, how are we going to do this? Are we going to get a bunch of investment money? Are we going to put our own money into this? Are we going to do a little bit of both? I mean, so those are the big decisions that had to be made. And, you know, I don't want to delve too much into the whole economic plan, but, you know, I didn't want to be beholden to anybody. The biggest thing was I didn't want to get ahead of the skis. I didn't want to get out in front and fall on my face. And so the easy thing to me would be to, okay, and I've had plenty of offers, and I continue to have plenty of offers, and people will say, I want to invest in your site. I believe in what you're doing. You know, I didn't want to do that and then all of a sudden have a false sense of security and then the money to run out. And then what do I do? And so I decided to take the approach of, we're going to go slow and steady. I know others, like The Athletic, have done it a different way. I believe in what we're doing in terms of the subscribers pay for the talent, advertising when it comes on board, and we're about to enact sort of that part of the plan coming up here shortly. That's going to pay for the travel, which is substantial, and then we're going to grow from there. I mean, is that the right choice? I don't know, but I figured I would have a smaller percentage of losing if I went the conservative route. So that's what we decided.
I would assume that you've obviously put your own money into this enterprise, right? I mean, forgetting
yep.
about forgetting about whatever the subscription number is right now, at a certain point,
yep.
initially, you probably had to put a significant amount of money into the site to start, correct?
Sure. I mean, we didn't have any income to the site until July 24th when we started. And the initial reaction and the membership numbers have been tremendous and way ahead where I thought we'd be, including on the money side. But yeah, I mean, you know, there were a lot of things, web development costs, you know, equipment costs, other things that we funded ourselves.
Okay. And I'm not going to ask you for proprietary numbers, but this is a five-figure outlay, six-figure outlay, something to that effect?
Yeah. I mean, it's safe to say that it's well into the five figures.
Okay. So now on the site, and this is the thing I like about your site and DK's site, is that you tell people how many members exist. And I think you do that, obviously, to foster a sense of community. There's some great transparency here. And so a couple months in, as I look at this right now in real time, you're at 5,318 members, 75 lifetime members. Are you ahead of where you expected to be regarding those numbers?
Yes, well ahead. You know, and those numbers are just paid members. We have another over 200 free, active, and retired military subscriptions. Beyond that, we really haven't given out any subscriptions. A couple of media ones here and there. You know, just so that people, you know, needed to read us were reading us. But that's well beyond where I thought we'd be at this point. You know, I think at the end of the day, I think in the first year, 10,000, by the end of the first year, 10,000 is a really good number. I would like to get to 20. Do I think we're going to do that? Probably not, but I would like to get somewhere between 10 and 20. And if we do that, and if the advertising comes through, like it looks like it's going to with our initial discussions with people, then we're going to be well ahead of where our projections were when we planned this all out.
Here's the thing that's very interesting to me, Greg, and it's specific to you compared to DK and Paul. You are in what I would consider the most fervent, I mean, listen, it's all debatable, but I can make a pretty strong argument that Boston is the most fervent sports town in America.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
From the passion to the parochialness to the, quite frankly, the aggression of sports fans and sports hosts, it makes it it's an incredible city. Having covered stuff there, having been on the radio there many, many times, but it's a competitive, super highly hyper-competitive sports media market. And so
yep.
when you looked around, where someone like Paul Kuharsky, really he can make the case that I can beat everybody on the Titans or I could provide things that nobody else has, that's a harder case for you. So what made you convinced that against the Globe, against the Herald, against WEEI, against 98.5, that you could start something in Boston and get people to read you guys where they have all this other sports content?
Look, this isn't 1995 in terms of newspapers and coverage in Boston. I mean, if this was the Globe in 1992, would I be doing this? No. But I think that there are certainly avenues to be competitive. I think that a big thing where we've come across as a breath of fresh air is that is the user experience. I mean, go on outside of the globe, which is really, really expensive for people. And I hear that from people all the time. You know, go to the Herald's website, go to Comcast's website, go to NESN's website, go to CBS Boston's website. Good luck trying to consume any news on there. Now, then come over to BostonSportsJournal.com and see how easy the experience is there. And that is going to be paramount to what we do. And I think the biggest thing, and I heard your initial podcast with Chad Finn, and you had another guest on. I think one of the big things that that is not on your radar, and maybe DK talked about this because I know he's encountered this in Pittsburgh, is that, you know, and certainly I've had pauses about the level of competition because I really respect all, you know, my competitors and the colleagues that I go against. They're all really good. But what people don't understand is that, and sometimes I didn't quite understand it, is that I don't have to win in Boston, you know, to be successful. Really, where Boston Sports Journal is going to sink or fall, and right now it's where is sink or rise, and right now we're rising, is to all those displaced New Englanders across the country. That are looking for one-stop just sports shopping. That's a clean environment. That's affordable for them. Where they can get engrossed in the sports coverage. And that's our numbers have bared that out. I mean, half of our subscribers and visitors come from New England. Half come from outside. And that's just. And Richard, We haven't even enacted really the second phase of this whole thing, which is. More Facebook advertising, more outreach when I'm on the road, you know, all that stuff to pump up those numbers. Because, I mean, in terms of states, and I was just looking at it last night, Massachusetts is number one by far in terms of visitors. Number two is New York. Number three is California. Florida and Texas and Ohio are in our top 10. I mean, that's where Boston Sports Journal can succeed, is with all the many displaced New Englanders across the country looking for one-stop shopping where they can keep up to date on everything and not have to worry about fighting through a bunch of garbage on websites.
Let me ask you a couple of questions in terms of what you've seen so far in early results in terms of interest in your site's content. Does it break down evenly between Celtics, Red Sox, Patriots, Bruins? Is it more heavy Red Sox, Patriots now because they're in season? Is it heavier Celtics just because of the unbelievable mega trade that they did? Can you give me a sense of what you have found so far early that people are interested in?
Yeah, it's a little bit hard to judge because we got off to a little bit of a late start with the Bruins coverage just because I wanted to wait for Joe McDonald. He was the guy that I wanted, but ESPN, with their ridiculous layoff and buyout scenarios for their people, their unfair treatment of their now former workers, you know, we had to wait for Joe. But he was the right guy, being a New Englander, being with great sources, great experience. I wanted to wait for Joe. And so, plus, nothing was going on in the NHL at the time. So I just decided the best thing to do was just to wait. And so it's a little bit tough because that might have delayed some Bruins fans. But, you know, now that they've started in the preseason and stuff like that, I mean, there's no question that the Patriots are by far the number one traffic driver on the site. And there's no question about that. I would say, surprisingly, in number two would be the Celtics. And I think part of that has to do with who I hired, Brian Robb, who has really been a young up-and-comer for a while, who started Celtics blog with Zach Lowe and other people who are really smart and know the game. And so he's really tapped into that. The Red Sox are number three. I don't know why that is. I think it's because people, you know, I don't think they really like this team all that much. And I will say that I've been disappointed in the Bruins numbers. But that just might be a case of, look, it's still September, it's 90 degrees out. People aren't really ready for hockey. And they usually don't start getting into hockey around here until December, and then when the Patriots season ends. So we'll have to see, but there's no question that the Patriots drive the bus.
Greg, what has been the reaction to local teams in terms of credentialing you, in terms of recognizing you? One of the advantages you have, of course, from being known for the Patriots is that that shouldn't be an issue in terms of getting credentials for the Patriots. Is it the same thing because you've hired established writers in the market that you're getting access from the Celtics, Bruins, Red Sox, et cetera, where maybe another independent site might not be able to get that kind of access right away? And let's face it, you have to have access because that's what your subscribers are going to pay for.
Right. You know, what the latter thing that you mentioned, that's a possibility. I don't know. All I can say is that we have been welcomed with complete open arms by all of the sports teams. And basically the overriding comment that I heard from the directors of media relations were, you know, your reputation speaks for itself. And if you follow through and hire the type of people and do the job like you've done it in your career, we have no issues with welcoming you onto the beat, and we look forward to it.
What are there areas that you think you will expand beyond what you're doing now? How deep would you expand, let's say, to the colleges? Would you, if things in your dream ideal world, I know that how popular high school sports are in the Boston area, particularly like high school football in the fall. Would you think about going that deep, or right now is the plan just to sort of cover what you're covering right now?
Yeah, I mean, that's always, it's something I think about on a daily basis. And, you know, I will say that's been one of the toughest things about this job is like, okay, when, you know, this is where we are at monetarily right now. You know, if you just took where we are in that picture right now and projected it forward, or, you know, it's not going to keep the same pace. I know that, but we're off to a really good start. And it's like, okay, do I just spend the money now? And I mean, my most immediate things right now that I want to do is I want to get at some point soon here, I would like to get a site manager / editor / social, somebody who does a little bit of everything that takes all that stuff off my plate, because right now I'm killing myself, you know, basically doing everything. And you know, most of the time it's fine. I love it. And it's certainly nothing that I feel is out of my wheelhouse or anything. I feel comfortable in the job. It's just, you know, it's tough. And, you know, I want to be a husband and I want to be a father too. And, you know, trying to do all those things is tough. And it's, you know, it's been tough on my wife and that's just part of the deal right now. But I would like to get, that's the number one thing that I would like to do. Number two, I would like to get some sort of GA, probably with a specialization in baseball at some point. To sort of alleviate things and sort of fill the gaps. And then beyond that, you know, probably for next year, I would like to cover the Revolution. I would like to cover BC. I would like to cover UMass. Other things I would like to do, college hockey, perhaps the New England amateur golf scene, because I think there's a big need, and I think there's a lot of, you know, subscribers and advertising money there. High schools, yeah, I would like to do that at some point, but it's, you know, that's tough. I mean, how can you tell that you're getting those subscribers? And it's sort of one of the reasons why I would not join up with a national model. Why I think a lot of subscriber, like national models, wouldn't work. And it's the same thing sort of high schools here regionally, is are you going to cover the teams enough for people to say, okay, I'm going to buy in? And how do you do that? So I would love to. I mean, I graduated from Lincoln Sudbury. I go to high school games all the time around here. I would love to do something like that, but that's probably going to be down the road, you know, once we're a little bit more financially secure. But there are certainly things I would like to do to bring more value to our members. It's just a question of when do you pull the trigger on that? And I have I sort of wrestle with that every day within myself, and that's it's you know, but I guess that's what I need to do.
How have you, I'm trying to think where I would go. In terms of your learnings from DK, I know that he mentioned this, that he sold his, you know, his sort of the back end of his site to you, and that's what you use, basically the same, same kind of tech. What have you learned from his site and his findings of how he's done what he's done in Pittsburgh that you could use in Boston?
Well, I mean, it's a lot of the things that I practiced, like I said, on, you know, when I was in charge of the Packers blog at the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, where, I mean, we grew that from like nothing to, you know, 500 comments on a blog post, and you know, we won an editor and publisher award for best sports blog at the time, and it's, you know, what he does, what I saw were a lot of the things I tried to do, which is basically, and what I try to do every day, which is put yourself in the spot of the fan, and, you know, what do they want? How can you include them? How can you make them part of the conversation? I think the biggest thing that DK has done and why he's been such a success, and it's where I wonder where some of the other models might not succeed, is you have to build a community, in my opinion. It has to be a community of sports fans that's inclusive, that people feel a part of what's going on. I think DK's been just tremendous at that, keeping people abreast of what's going on the site, that they're a part of it. I think all of that stuff is vital, but that's stuff that, you know, I've always done and I've always thought has been important to doing the job right. So, but I think that's the big thing.
All right, a couple more here, Greg. How do you look at The Athletic in terms of their model and them as potential competition?
Well, I mean, number one, I expect them to come into Boston in some form, or, you know, at least us to have some conversation at some point. I know we tried, once I announced, I tried to keep this quiet because I didn't want to keep competitors to a minimum. So I kept this very quiet for as long as possible. Once they got wind of the site, they tried to get in touch with me. We tried to talk. It just didn't work out. We kept playing phone tag, you know, which, you know, happens. You know, I'm always supportive when, you know, fellow hacks are getting jobs. But my number one question when I look at their model is, what's the end game? They're certainly throwing a lot of money around, and that's great, you know, but what happens 2 years from now when the money runs out? Do they get more money? What's the end game? I just don't understand the model. Maybe there is a sound model. I mean, just no one has told me. I look at it, and from where I am in terms of subscribers, and I have said I will take advertising, and we will. They have said that they won't. I just wonder how they're doing things, because I see the people that they've hired. I've heard some of the numbers that they've thrown around, and I would be surprised if any of their sites, maybe outside of the Bay Area, has subscription numbers like I do. And so I look at my numbers, and I see where I am, and I'm not even close to the outlay in terms of salaries and things like that that they've done. So I just don't know how they're going to do it. I'm sure they have a bunch of smart people who work there, and I'm sure they have a plan. I have a tough time seeing what the end game is, unless it's, you know, trying to follow Bleacher Report and getting sold to some sort of legacy media corporation, which is possible. But I think after the whole Bleacher Report thing, I don't know if that's really in the cards for anybody at this point. I mean, but we'll see.
All right, two more. What would be the dream Boston Sports Journal story?
The dream? Well, how do you mean?
Like, if you could
you
get...
You mean like
if
that, you, I, that
if,
I could...
If you can get any story right now in Boston, and I'll let you sort of frame it however you want, whether it's a straight feature, whether it's Q&A, whether it's a podcast, whether it's video, whatever it is, if you, what would be your dream get right now for the site? I guess specifically that would really get the attention of the city's sports fans.
I, I'm not sure about the specifics, but it would have to be something probably with Bill Belichick, where, you know, maybe him and I talk football and we have a great relationship. We've had a great relationship since I started covering the team. There's a lot of mutual respect there. He has a lot of respect for how I've done the job since I've covered him. And so it would be something with, you know, regular access where he actually answers questions on a regular basis. So I guess it would definitely have to be something Belichick related.
I like to maybe you can get Belichick to cover the Celtics for you in the offseason. Be awesome, actually.
There you go.
All right. And then finally, do you, and I asked this of DK as well, your market is different because Boston is a bigger market than Pittsburgh. Pittsburgh's a sports craze market. I probably can make the argument Boston's probably a little more. Do you have a number in mind as to what would be like an ideal kind of subscription number or like a ceiling kind of number where if you hit that, I mean, this business, this is something that's sustainable for, you know, years and years, decades, et cetera.
No, I don't really have, you know, a number like that. I would say if we can grow, you know, it used to be that I wanted to grow 20,000 each year to like 100,000 in year five. I mean, you know, maybe that's the case after, you know, seeing our start and sort of, you know, where we are in certain areas right now. I think we could, you know, if we could get 10,000 a year, you know, we're cooking with gas, in my opinion. And, you know, so, you know, but I think a big key to this whole thing is developing partnerships with strong regional brands because, you know, in our initial conversations, and I figured it was going to go this way, you know, national brands have, you know, no interest in us because they're looking, they hire marketing firms that look for the best bang for their buck. And, you know, I don't think we're ever going to be big enough for that kind of stuff. And nor do I really want to be that big. I mean, I don't have any other aspirations other than being, you know, a strong New England brand and that people know us and know that when they talk about BostonSportsJournal.com, they're talking about just straight, really good sports coverage of their teams.
Greg Bedard's Boston Sports Journal is now up. You can get you can look at it at www.bostonsportsjournal.com. When you get there on the banner, you can go to subscribe, and it's sort of the different ways in which you can get a new subscription, a gift subscription, student subscription, military subscription. They cover the Patriots, Red Sox, Bruins, and Celtics. Not only are there a lot of Boston people who listen to this podcast, I know, but there are people from Massachusetts who are now elsewhere in the country. And, you know, he to Greg's credit, I'm not just saying this to kiss his ass, he's got a staff of very talented people so far. So the pieces read like you would expect in a major metropolitan newspaper, and that is to credit to Greg and to his staff. Greg, I wish you the best of luck heading forward. I think it's a really interesting enterprise that you've gone out and created, and I imagine a lot of people in the sports media landscape will be following. Thanks, thanks again. Best of luck, and thanks for joining us on the Sports Illustrated Media Podcast.
No problem. Thanks for having me, Richard.
All right, back in the studio, my thanks to Dejan Kovacevic of DK Pittsburgh Sports, Paul Kuharski, as well as Greg Bedard. All three gentlemen trying to make it in the sports space as independents. And hopefully you found those conversations interesting. Three different markets, obviously, Pittsburgh, Nashville, and Boston, very sports-crazed markets. And so hopefully I give you a little bit of a slice of what they're doing. And if you're someone who has interest in maybe doing that either today or down the road, that provides some insight for you. Podcasts prior to this one include the Sports Media Roundtable with John Orand and Andrew Buchholz, awful announcing Sports Business Daily there. Evan Osnos of The New Yorker, that's one my producer Luke Pellegrino loved, as did I. He's the New Yorker writer who reported from inside North Korea, and we spent 45 minutes him on what it was like to basically get that assignment and then to report in country. We also did a roundtable on Sergio Dipp and Jamel Hill as well, with Marley Rivera of ESPN and Luis Miguel Echigata of Sports Illustrated. My colleague James Andrew Miller, Kenny Mayne, Stu Mandel, Seth Davis, ESPN's Kathy Hubberth. Those are the last couple podcasts we've done. My thanks to Lou Pellegrino for producing this podcast. Thanks to Cadence 13 and Sports Illustrated. This is Richard Deitch. We'll see you again on the Sports Illustrated Media Podcast.
Do you know about the Locked On Podcast Network? The number one daily sports podcast network. Locked On has a daily podcast on every NBA and NFL team, plus a growing lineup of college and MLB teams. You get a daily bite-sized podcast giving you the latest on your team from the local experts. Lakers fans, search Locked On Lakers. Cowboys fans, search Locked On Cowboys. Just search Locked On, your favorite team, on Apple Podcasts or Google Podcasts, or tell your smart speaker to play podcast Locked On, your favorite team. Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.